Support comes from the Arizona Inn, a Four Diamond, family-owned historic resort hotel and restaurant on Elm Street near the U of A. Information is at arizonainn.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jim Nintzel. I'm the host for Zona Politics. Today, we are going to be talking with Congressman Tom O'Halloran, who represents Congressional District 1. It is, I think I'm contractually obligated to say, a sprawling district that stretches all the way from Oro Valley in the Marana area, all the way up through Pinal County, eastern rural Arizona, Flagstaff, the Grand Canyon, the northern Arizona districts. Very big district with a lot of different interest groups up there, Congressman.
It's interesting. It's a balancing process all the time. We have diversified economic issues, diversified environmental issues. Obviously, we have some of the most beautiful land in America, including Grand Canyon and five national forests and some of the best water resources Arizona has. So and 12 Native American tribes. So there's never any shortage of something to do.
And one thing you don't have, though, is a section of the border in your district. But I am wondering about your thoughts about this national emergency declaration regarding the construction of a wall that the president has undertaken here. You voted against you voted for a bill nullifying the emergency. But talk a little bit about your thoughts.
Well, we have a process in Congress, and the president has to abide by that process, just like we have to abide by everything else within the Constitution. And we need to recognize that we're a co-equal branch of government and have to be just because the president, sometimes any president, doesn't get their way, doesn't mean that we go into an emergency response. These are things that have to be addressed in a logical way. And by the president's own words, he says he could do it at any time. There's no real need to do it right now. So by definition, it's not an emergency. We have to secure our border. There's no doubt about that. How we do that and to what extent we need to secure the rest of America's security through visa programs and additional work in the ports of entry, whether it's by sea or land, north, south, east, or west, that needs to be a part of a comprehensive package.
Yeah, and there was some money in the last budget towards border security. And talk a little bit about what you think are the best strategies in terms of securing the border and where, if at all, does a wall make sense?
Well, we have a wall down there. In some locations, the wall is not hasn't been updated in more than a decade or so. That needs to be worked on location-wise. We've put money, $1.6 billion the last budget, $1.3 billion a budget before that, to do security along the border to make sure that we have the type of security that fits the area of need. And we also need 3,000, we're short 3,000 border patrol at the border. That doesn't help us. And one of the things we really need to do is find a reason why we're not being able to hire people, and then find a way to both keep people, because that's part of the problem, keeping our Border Patrol agents and making sure that we're competitive and paying them, and then look at their needs along the border and make sure that they have the appropriate security methods in order to be able to get to where they need to go. I mean, there's parts of that border we're still hiking into. We shouldn't have to be doing that. We should have a road so we can respond quickly. Whether there's a fence at that location or it's an intrusion, we're able to see people coming 10 miles out. I mean, and they're on foot. We can get there pretty fast if there was a road there.
And what about some of the environmental consequences of building a wall? I know some folks are saying this. If you're not careful about where you build a wall, you have some pretty dramatic environmental consequences.
Well, I've been along that wall in many locations, and you have the need to be able to make sure that the wildlife goes back and forth. Ranchers have the ranchers ranch on both sides of that border, and so you have to be able to take that into account. Water flow at the border, it's hard to allow that to be obstructed. So you have to take that into account. We have areas of the border where water comes from Mexico into the United States, and like the San Pedro River and others, that need the ability to have free flow. So, we have one of the top areas for bird sanctuary down south, southern part, down the San Pedro there. That's a really important ecological zone for birds throughout America.
And we're talking about a little bit about the president here. And this week, he once again resumed these attacks on John McCain, the deceased senator. And I'm just wondering your thoughts on what you've been hearing from President Trump on about John McCain.
I'm really disheartened. I've written press releases on this issue too many times. The McCain family needs to be able to have the senator's death as part of their family issue, not the world's family issue. The president has to let things go. I'm just totally amazed that this is going on. I take a look at John McCain's history. Did I agree with him all the time? No. But that doesn't mean he wasn't an American hero. That doesn't mean he shouldn't be respected for the years and years of public service and his time in the military and almost 6 years of being tortured and helping others while he's being tortured, with the ability to be saying, we'll let you go because of your father being an admiral, and him saying, no, I'm not going to go until the rest of us go. That alone is an indication of true leadership, and the president should acknowledge that leadership and let it go.
If you're just tuning in, I'm Jim Ninsel, your host for Zona Politics, and we are talking with Congressman Tom O'Halloran, a Democrat who represents Congressional District 1 here on KXCI 91.3 FM. And the Democrats have begun a number of investigations into the Trump administration. We already had Michael Cohen testifying in Congress. And I wonder, did you take anything away from Michael Cohen's testimony? And also, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, recently said that it's just not worth it to pursue impeachment because of the way it would divide the country. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on the impeachment question.
Well, I've always said that if there's an appropriate amount of evidence to impeach, that that's something that we need to consider into the future, not right now. I'm a former investigator. I didn't go to the state's attorney's office and when I was a police officer and go, before we find out all the facts, let's impeach this person. No, we need to go through the process of knowing what we're going to be impeaching somebody for if we are to do that. And we aren't at that level yet until the Mueller investigation comes out. And I've been very consistent we shouldn't even be talking about impeachment until we know the facts as they are presented to the grand jury, if that is the case, or to the American people, which needs to be the case. Everybody in America should be able to have access to this investigative process.
And the Mueller report, you think that should be released?
100%.
Let me ask you about something that's been going on with the Democrats. There was a controversy about one of your freshman colleagues, Representative Omar, and some comments that some people took to be kind of dog whistles in an anti-Semitic tone. And there was a subsequent House resolution condemning hate across the board. And I'm just wondering your thoughts on what we're seeing with Representative Omar's comment.
I think they're not in keeping with what we expect of our leadership. We should be trying to bring people together, not separate people. We should be acknowledging the wrongs of the past or things that are going wrong now, but not in a way that demeans other members of the body or the public. We are all Americans. We have the right to our opinions, but there is no room for in our society or in the world, for that matter, for hatred. And when she speaks to the issues of hatred, keep it at a balanced approach. I voted for that bill. I would have preferred two bills, one bill on specifically the Omar issue and the anti-Semitism parts of it, and then the other bill on hate speech and, for that matter, any type of violence within our society.
You know, despite what a lot of people see as dysfunction in Washington right now, the Congress actually passed a pretty major environmental piece of legislation, the Natural Resources Management Act. Talk a little bit, number one, about how this happened, and number two, what's going to come from this?
Well, it's been something that's been in the works for a while, it'll help set aside a number of national monuments. And in Arizona, obviously, we know that there's been a lot of discussion over the last two decades, at least, about whether national monuments should be done through the president or the Congress. And in this case, Congress took the right actions and did that. It went out of the House unanimously. So that shows the when we are able to sit down, when we are able to talk about the issues that America faces and find common ground, we can find bipartisan approaches to things. And I would wish we would do a lot more of that in order to make sure the American people's priorities are respected.
What would you say were the biggest wins for Arizona in this legislation?
Well, we had a lot of them. I mean, first of all, just the for the Arizona and the rest of the country to settle some of these land management issues, whether they're here in Arizona or up in Utah or Colorado, you name it. It was a fairly expansive process. Up in my district and throughout Arizona, there were a number of areas that we've been trying to get land set aside for either community purposes or for protections of riparian habitat or others. We were able to accomplish that. And that's good work. That's important. I was very glad to see it, and hopefully we'll be able to find ways to do that in the future, like Mr. Grijalva's bill, which I am a primary co-sponsor on, of protection of the uranium from uranium mining around the Grand Canyon, or coming to an agreement on Bears Ears up in southern Utah. We have a lot of other work to do. Is the bottom line to protect some of the most beautiful lands in the world and some of the most sacred lands to Native American people.
Talk a little bit about that uranium mining at the Grand Canyon. I believe there's a moratorium on it now, and this would extend it to permanent status?
Exactly. It's needed. We have an industry that 70 years ago, the United States government went without asking the Navajo people, said, we're going to start mining for uranium on your lands. And by the way, we aren't going to do it in a very organized fashion because we didn't keep enough records to even know who was mining what location, and we can't go back and get monies from them to clean up those 500 and some sites that are up there that children are playing in that could be contaminating our groundwater that goes into the Colorado River. I could go on and on, but the bottom line is seven decades of this, and we still haven't gotten substantial work done in the area, even though we have $1.7 billion set aside. It's time for the government to accept its responsibility and get this work done. A tremendous amount of these sites are along the Little Colorado River, and that's significant in that every time there's a serious storm and stuff, these sites are out on the desert floor, and that contamination sweeps into the Little Colorado River and other tributaries. I've never come across a situation where you even have the money to clean things up. And for the last three decades, there has been no real solid movement other than in courts to get the money to get these sites cleaned up. And they are a hazard to not only the people of the Navajo Nation in northern Arizona, but for our travelers that come through those areas. So, no, it's way past due, and there should be not a drop of uranium mining done in these areas until there's they haven't proven, even now, the ones that do have permits and the couple of mines that are up there have consistently gone around and not performed their mining according to the regulatory environment and actually hit some of their the things that they did up there to deal with contamination of groundwater.
As long as we're talking about mining, down here the Rosemont mine has received the final permit it needs to move forward. There were concerns that the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers had worries that the impact of the mine on the water table here, and they were leaning towards not approving this, and under the current administration that seems to have been turned around. There's some concern that there were politics involved in the issuance of this permit. I wonder your thoughts on that, and is there anything Congress should be doing in this case?
Well, first of all, we should look into it from the standpoint of oversight. If we've had two major knowledgeable agencies with the expertise and the technology to be able to understand the issue, and they have questions, and we're still going to move ahead and have the Rosemont mine being permitted, that's problematic. I'm working on an issue up north on fracking right now of right next door, and in fact, it can go underneath the Petrified National Forest. And what's that about that you don't even allow basically public comment for about 10 days, and the BLM can do a Bureau of Land Management can just permit it, and some of the sites are being mined already. So we've been working on that issue on a consistent basis now. But Rosemont Mine, that's going to be with people for millennium, and here we are having two of our major agencies that clearly identify that they have problems, and it appears that there aren't any real mitigations principles put in mind or into the regulatory structure to take that into effect or account.
And as long as we're talking about the environment, what's your take on this Green New Deal that has been proposed to combat climate change?
Well, first of all, it's a resolution. It has to be. There's a lot of vetting that has to go through this. I've been working on climate change since for the last 21 years, about whether it's on the Colorado River and getting modeling done, or in our national forests where I was the Governor Napolitano's co-chair on forest health, and how to save our forests that have an impact on climate change, or whether when I was in the legislature and signed a letter to make sure that we had standards, renewable energy standards in the state of Arizona. And I could go on and on, but the bottom line here is a lot of work's been done. A lot of plants are closing down, coal generation plants and others, our air is getting cleaner, but we have to move at a faster pace, and that's where our debate needs to be. This is a good focal point to have discussions around right now, but we don't have, and it's not a plan, it's not a bill to set in motion anything other than we are resolving. But in order to do that, we resolve to promise the American people that we clean up X amount in 10 years, when we don't even know how much it's going to cost. And we do have to find a way to do this at an expedited process, but we have to do it in a more business-like way. Let's have the debate on climate change, which we should have, but let's also have the realistic knowledge that we have to find ways to fund these and the impact on our society and our economy.
And you mentioned the power plants closing down. One of those is up in your district, up on the Navajo Reservation, and that is going to have a pretty big economic impact up there.
Right, and we're about to release a bill to try to find and help on economic development potential up in that area, because of the related relation between the federal government and that mine, because we as the federal government own, I think it's about 26% of, not the mine, but of the plant, 26% of the plant. We have to find a way to make sure that we don't traumatize or have such a huge impact on those communities up there and those families up there. But again, the Navajo are still trying to work at keeping the plant open. I don't know that the economy or the economic environment for coal generation, not only there but for other areas of the country, is going in the right direction to maintain a lot of these plants, because of the competitiveness of either natural gas and renewable energy these days. So we'll see where that goes. But one way or the other, we have to find something to help with the economic development of that area, so these families aren't hurt as bad as it could be. And the tribes. I mean, there's huge amounts of money that come from that plant, into the tribes, both the Navajo and the Hopi, that impact their general fund, which will impact each and every citizen of those tribal nations.
And there aren't a lot of other economic opportunities up in that area.
No, we're trying to find more. We're trying to get broadband brought into the high-speed fiber to be brought in there. We created zones for tax advantages to businesses that move into those areas. We've been trying to deal and address the infrastructure issues of those areas in order to be more competitive, especially along the I-40 corridor and throughout Indian country. I mean, we have unemployment rates that go from 50% on Navajo right now and Hopi about 80% to White Mountain in the 70% in the San Carlos. I mean, some of these conditions are third world conditions here in the United States of America. And this is just not something that's that we should be looking at and saying, oh, well, you know, they're going to have to get these things done, even though we're the ones that signed treaties with them and address their issues. And in many cases, I'm finding out that we've not only changed those treaties multiple times, but we've changed what we've promised to address when we've moved people under the Navajo Hopi Land Settlement Act. We moved people and forced people off certain lands, made them promises of here's where you're going to move to, and it's been a disaster. We're working on that also. But I hope people start to understand the critical need of these areas.
And if you're just tuning in, this is Zona Politics. I'm your host, Jim Nintzel, and we are talking with Congressman Tom O'Halloran about a whole bunch of different issues. And I wanted to shift gears over to the background check legislation that passed the House, the gun violence legislation that passed the House. And you were supportive of that?
Well, I definitely was supportive of it. You know, I'm a former homicide investigator from Chicago, and I've seen too much violence in our society. You know, I'm one of those guys that knocked on the door and had to tell a mother and father or the children that somebody close to them within their immediate family had just been murdered on the streets or murdered somewhere else. And the trauma, it's not a day of trauma. It's not a couple of hours of trauma. It's a lifetime of trauma for those families. And we're talking about homicides and stuff all this time, but the people that have to live with the after effects of some of these attacks, that goes on throughout the rest of their lives too, if they were able to survive. And the cost to our healthcare system, and you could go on and on. This has to be part of, violence in America has to be part of a debate within our society, because we can do so much better than to see this many people dying in the greatest country on earth, because we have so much violence in our society.
And this would basically extend the requirement to do background checks to private sales of firearms between people who are basically secondhand sellers who aren't federally licensed.
Exactly. And but not between, there's a couple of loopholes in there still. But the bottom line is, I don't think, I haven't run into too many people that are against this. You know, even NRA members are for this in overwhelming percentages. It doesn't take guns away from anybody, but it does say to us, if we're going to allow people to have the right to have a gun, that we need to be able to make sure we know they're not a convicted felon, that they're not here in this country to commit other crimes, that they haven't committed domestic violence or some of the other predatory issues that are within our society. And obviously the psychological issues as it relates to possession of a firearm and your current mental health issues.
And you know, the Trump administration recently proposed a rule that would cut off family planning dollars to organizations that refer patients for abortions. This is, I think, an effort to try to take funding away from Planned Parenthood that sees a lot of low-income women for health care needs other than abortion. And I'm wondering what you think of that particular proposal.
Well, you know, Planned Parenthood, you know, I'm of the opinion Planned Parenthood does an outstanding job across this nation on making sure that women that might have cancer or other health issues get some treatment. And you had mentioned low-income people. We have a law already on the books that federal dollars cannot be used for abortion, the Hyde Amendment, and that's been there for years. So this whole concept that that money, that federal money, goes to abortions is just not true. It goes to the health care of women. And, you know, this decision is between the woman that's pregnant and making her decision with her family and their religious leaders, if they want to seek that out, to make that decision in their lives. And again, that's why we call it a choice. It's a choice of a woman to make that decision. It's her body. And but no federal money is being used. This keeps this whole political environment. The Supreme Court has upheld this, and I just don't understand why we keep going back to it all the time. Other than the fact that it politically, it's something that election time comes up and it rears its head again.
We got time for one more question. We're talking to Tom O'Halloran here on Zone of Politics with Jim Mintzel. And I just wanted to ask you that the Trump administration has released its budget. And if you look, it appears they're expecting deficits over $1 trillion to continue for at least four more years. And I'm just wondering your thoughts on the ever-increasing deficit.
Well, what a change from a few years ago when they were yelling at the Democratic Party all the time for wanting to overspend. But I think the president, I've spent and voted for money to increase our military's readiness and to work on other issues. But where the real issue comes here, and I don't think there's either party in Congress right now that wants to go along with these requests. But the bottom line is, by the end of the next decade, we'll have almost, in just debt service alone, it'll be higher than the amount we pay for our military. So we have to look at what are the priorities of our nation and how should we be spending our money. But you don't do it by coming in and saying that we'll increase money over here, understanding that we're going to have a deficit, and try to offset that by decreasing money in almost 70% of the rest of government. Much of that having impacts on the health and welfare of our citizens, our ability to address critical issues within our society, like infrastructure and others, and make sure our families are cared for in an appropriate way, and help our economy. The whole thinking within his proposal, like the last one and like the one before that, which bipartisan across the entire Congress, they just wrote it off. It's not doable for the American people.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you, Congressman Tom O'Halloran, for joining us here on Zone of Politics today. And that will do it for our show here on KXEI. I'm Jim Mintzel. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Jim.
Zone of Politics is made possible with the generous support of the Loft Cinema, Tucson's independent movie theater. The Loft features independent, foreign, and documentary films, cult classics, discussions with filmmakers, and much more, including the Loft Film Fest in November. The Loft is located at 3233 East Speedway Boulevard. Showtimes can be found at loftcinema.org.